I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Donon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm one of your usual hosts, Mike Miller. Tonight, I'm joined once again by Harry Lights Out Harrison.
Boom.
Boom. No. Start like that. And as you can see, we're joined by an illustrious, very, very special guest, a Sky Sports analyst, a BBL, Sheffield Sharks legend, an always born and brand ambassador, and just an all-round top bloke. It's Mr. Mike Tuck. How's it going?
It's going well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, good to have you back. And in the background, making the magic happen, causing trouble on the back of the bus, it's Kirk Killick. How's it doing?
Hello.
To everyone out there watching and listening back, thank you very much. If you're not already following us, make sure you are at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, everywhere. Come join our Discord community. We talk hoops every day, discord.me/doubleclutch. And if you're not watching live, why not come and watch us live at twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. We've got a heck of a lot of things to get through today and only an hour to do it again in. We're what, one last week of the regular season. This is go time. But we've got a guest on, so we're going to start with some Q&A. So, Mike, I'm going to come at you with some great questions just to get you in game shape, ready for the award section we're going to go into. How difficult was this season for you in terms of the world we've been living in? Because obviously it's nothing like it has ever happened before. So how was that experience for you?
Yeah, it was strange, and it was just one of those ones where no matter how many games we played, it just felt eerie, like every game, you know, because you're just walking into these arenas, these gyms that are you're used to be, you know, bustling with fans and screaming fans and supporters, and there's just nothing. There's just nobody in there. So it was extremely quiet. And like I said, just like an eerie feeling. I think the biggest takeaway from it all was learning early on that we kind of had to create our own energy, you know, as a team and from the bench and from the guys on the court. So it was probably the most loud and animated season in that sense, which was cool. Cause it, you know, it kind of brought guys out of their shell a little bit more, but yeah, just all the regulations we had to follow, getting tested every week, just the thought of having a positive test or, you know, just that anxiety of that. And it was just such a strange time to be playing, but you know, we got through the season, and just happy we got through it and, you know, nothing seriously bad happened. So, here we are, another postseason for me.
Yeah. It must be incredibly difficult to have gone through that. And it's just completely different to what the normal experience of being a professional athlete has been like. In terms of, you know, the way the lockdowns worked, did it impact your ability to stay in shape and to work out and get access to, you know, whether it be weights or whatever? I know obviously that elite clubs were allowed to practice, but you know, there's more than just the on-court side of things. So how did that impact you?
Yeah, so we weren't let into a weight room for a large portion of the season. We didn't have access. We play and train in the weight room at Ponds Forge up in Sheffield, and we were lucky enough for them to let us onto the court every day. And it was actually nice because typically because it's not our own venue, there's, you know, lots of other people using the gym and stuff. So usually when we have our slot on the court, it's like there's somebody before us and there's somebody after us and we're getting kicked off. So we had extra time on the court before and after. Guys were coming in and getting extra shots up. We set up a few weights by the court side. So we were doing lifting and those type of things on the court or just before or after practice. But in terms of actually getting in a weight room and going to see an actual strength trainer, we didn't have access to that. I know other teams around the league did because of the situations that they were in, but for ourselves, we didn't. So that was strange as well. Just doing a lot of home workouts, a lot of push-ups, and just trying to get it in, you know, before and after practice. That was, you know, a tough thing to deal with.
Yeah, it sounds it. Going back to sort of normal times, last weekend was the 5th year anniversary of your MVP performance in the playoff finals. I remember watching that game. Did you allow yourself to sort of take a minute and reflect on that point of your career?
Yeah, I mean, you see the memories pop up on Facebook, and I got tagged in a few things on Twitter, and that game was, you know, just such a special moment for you know, not only myself, especially myself, but the Sharks and the organization, and just how that kind of year just all culminated in that one moment for us. And it was just down at the O2, such a, you know, such a huge arena, big platform, and we were the, you know, the heavily underdog team in that matchup. And my mom had flown over from Canada, and we had a bunch of family at the game, and so it was cool to look back and reflect on that. Now, saying that, it's also painful because we just got knocked out of the playoffs, and I was just like, we were having another chance at some silverware right now. But you know, it's one of those moments that no one can ever take away, and something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's quite an achievement. And yeah, I didn't mean to bring you straight up into the pain of the weekend's aggregate loss, because you guys were up for a lot of that game. I thought you had it in the bag. But we'll skip on past that in case it's too sore at this time.
It might be still fresh wound over here.
Yeah, I mean, Harry's obviously up in Sheffield. Harry, you've seen the Sharks a lot, obviously not this year. You know, what sort of things have you been seeing and wanting to talk about the Sharks?
I think it's been quite impressive, because the Sharks, obviously, it's been a fairly, and I hope you don't mind me saying, Mike, it's been a bit of an average season, you know, finishing 15-15 in the end. But I still think it's been a really good job by the team, considering the amount of new faces have been on the team. And do you kind of think that the new guys coming in, and a lot of them seeing quite a lot of minutes as well, do you think their impact has been good, essentially?
Yeah, I think we brought in a bunch of new guys this year. We brought in a lot of talent. This is probably one of the deepest rosters that we've had in a long time. Obviously, with the new change to the BBL import rules as well, you can have up to 5 imports on a team now. It doesn't matter where they're from. So, you know, if a team wants to go and get 5 Americans, they can do that. So we went out and, you know, we got a bunch of younger guys, but all super talented. But, you know, if you look at the starting lineup for the majority of the season, it was, you know, me in my mid to late 30s, and then a bunch of guys all under the age of, you know, 24, I think, or, you know, 23, 22, 21. So I think that's, you know, at times, you know, we just, you know, we made rookie mistakes. We made mistakes that that first year guys would make. And but that's the, you know, that's the roster that we had. It was just up and down. It was one of those seasons where we would win one big game, and then we would lose like 2 easy ones after that. Or, you know, we would just, it wasn't the consistency there that we typically had. But yeah, saying that, we still managed to finish 5th in the league. I think it's a testament to the league as well. I think the league is, you know, I've definitely seen it within the last like 3-4 seasons, the strides that the league is making in terms of, you know, the top teams all the way down to the bottom teams. It's competitive every night. Every team has a solid starting roster and a couple of guys coming off the bench. Now, if you had asked me this like maybe 5-8 years ago, it wasn't that way. It was probably the top 6 teams, and then there were 6 down at the bottom where you could take a night off against some of those guys. So I think the consistency throughout the whole league has definitely grown. I think, you know, there's a lot of tough teams out there. There's a lot of, you know, good and bigger name players starting to give this league a chance. So it's exciting being part of the BBL right now, because I think everything's heading in the right direction.
We had a couple of listener questions for you, so I might as well get them into this bit. You sort of touched on the age gap with some of your teammates. We had a question from Ross. With players playing later into their 30s now in the NBA, you've got, like, you know, adopting cryotech if you're LeBron, switching to plant-based foods if you're Chris Paul. What changes have you had to make yourself as you've gone deeper into your career?
That's a great question and a great observation. You know, it's I love to see all these guys in the NBA that are still going, still pushing. It's great to see, you know, Chris Paul just completely dominating on a new team and helping the Suns shine through. For me personally, I have done a little bit of cryotherapy. I've been seeing a chiropractor in Sheffield, Active Chiros. Shout out to Elias.
Broomhill.
I think that diet plays a huge part. I definitely watch what I eat much more than I did earlier in my career. Taking the time to get in the weight room and do all the little things. So we call it prehab. So you don't have to do the rehab. So I'm constantly in there just trying to just keep myself all together, keep myself balanced, keep myself strong. Cause I'm trying to ward off those injuries. Cause if you do get an injury at my age, it's not, you know, you can't sprain an ankle and be back in a couple of days like you could when you were 21. So the recovery takes a little bit longer. So just making sure that, yeah, I'm eating well, I'm drinking a lot of water, and then hitting the weight room and doing all those little things. So
awesome. We had another question. Hooping and looting. With Captain Tuck being an active part in both the playing side and media side of the BBL, what are the next steps that need to be taken in promoting the game to a wider audience? Now that we've seen an increase in quantity and quality being shown on Sky Sports and things such as the BBL player, are these launch platforms, or is there a danger that, you know, are they launch platforms on something bigger, or is there a danger that some might view this improvement as being sufficient to sort of keep the status quo?
Okay. I think that getting it back on Sky was like the number one step for me. I think that was the biggest thing that they could have done, is that somebody went in there and negotiated that deal. And I think that that's absolutely huge. Now we have this opportunity in front of us, you know, a 2-year deal. So this year, I think, you know, I got to commend everybody who's been involved with that broadcast, because I think they've done a tremendous job. Six Buzz, the production company who's primarily been involved in it, and then Televideo, who did the first round of the playoffs. They did a great job working with Sky Sports and bringing it all online. I think it looks really professional. I think it's what the league needs. So I think next year is going to be super important to help build on that deal and hopefully sign a longer term deal with Sky Sports to keep this on, you know, the biggest sports network that we have in the country, and keep it, you know, in front of people's eyes. The numbers look really good on there when we get the behind the scenes stats and stuff. So it's exciting in that sense. Now, in other senses, there's stuff that we need to work on. Obviously, BBL player, it's great that we can watch and stream all the games, but the quality of that isn't always up to par. Now, people got to realize that, you know, we're working with automated cameras that are, you know, it's a large system and it doesn't always go to plan. And obviously that's frustrating for everybody. But it's just the way that things are right now. So I think if there's some sort of investment in that, into bringing up the quality and the production of each game, you know, because we're in the era now where everything's at the tip of your fingers, and if you want to stream or watch something, you know, you have to be able to do that. So I think we have to kind of keep up with that trend and keep it going. But I do have faith in the BBL. I do think that there's a lot of exciting things happening with the BBL, and I think that they'll be able to pull it off. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, it's a good time to be involved in British basketball. I think it's only going to head to a better place. And I think this Sky Sports deal and then working on the other outlets that we can have, but it's all about just growing this basketball market in the UK. Everything is trending in that direction right now.
Yeah. It feels like there is momentum building finally, having been into British basketball or basketball in general in Britain for, 25 years plus, it finally seems like it's not just bubbling away under the surface. There's momentum building behind it as well, which is great. Okay, let's go around the association. It's been another rollercoaster week in the NBA as teams continue to jostle for the playoff and play-in seedings. The league has announced today, unfortunately, that referee Tony Brown is to miss the rest of the regular season and playoffs after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer last month. Brown officiated 1,109 regular season games and 35 playoff games, including his first finals appearance in 2020. He was a referee for 19 seasons, so we wish him all the best in his battle and hope to see him on court again soon. The Brooklyn Nets had one of their worst weeks of the season and have found themselves on the wrong end of a four-game loss streak before KD and Kyrie combined for 64 in a win over the Nuggets. On Monday, Carmelo Anthony passed Elvin Hayes for 10th on the all-time scoring list. Quite an incredible feat considering he was basically out of the league last season. He's just 72 points shy of Moses Malone, so needs to average over 18 points per game over the last four games in order to catch him. On Monday night, Russell Westbrook had 14 points, a career-high 21 boards, and a career-high tying 24 assists, which left him four triple-doubles shy of the all-time record in what would become a historically great week for him. Zion Williamson is out indefinitely with a fractured ring finger. He was averaging more than 20.3 points in the paint, which is more than Sabonis, Porzingis, Tobias Harris, Ja Morant, Gordon Hayward, D'Angelo Russell, Fred VanVleet, Anthony Edwards, Andrew Wiggins, and Kemba Walker are averaging from the entire floor. His 27 points per game on 61.2% field goal percentage is the most points per game while shooting over 60%. By Sunday, so we're flashing forwards a few days, Westbrook tied Oscar Robertson with 181 career triple-doubles, and a reminder to everyone that Oscar Robertson retired in 1974. That's almost half a century ago. So let's stick out west. Well, in fact, let's go back out west. There have been calls in the last couple of weeks to sack Terry Stotts as the Blazers head coach, but the Blazers have really rallied around him, turned it into a win streak. They've basically won seven of the last eight games, including a 5-1 road trip. They leapt over the Lakers on Friday night to take sole possession of the sixth seed. And during the past fortnight, they've had the league's number one offense, and Lillard has dropped 28.7 points, 7.7 assists, and knocked down 48% from three and 95% from the free throw line. They have a tough final week. They've got Houston tonight. They face the Jazz, then the Suns in a back-to-back before facing the Nuggets on Sunday, so nothing is certain in that race for the sixth seed. Philadelphia's Dwight Howard took over the 10th seed from Kevin Garnett, 10th seed, 10th spot from Kevin Garnett on the all-time double-doubles board. He's the only active player in the top 10. If we stick with Philly, they've won eight straight as they try and lock up the number one seed in the East. Steph Curry, going back out west, Steph Nuclear Curry continues to give the Warriors hopes and is in pole position for the scoring title. Per Justin Kabutko, there are six players in NBA history who have made at least 10 threes in multiple games. Steph has done it 22 times. The other five players have done it a combined 16 times. And just to go a bit further per stat muse, Steph has 12 career games with 11 plus threes. Four of those are this season. There are only two players who have actually had multiple games, and they've both got two each, and that's Dame and Clay. So that just, you know, we're witnessing the greatest shooter of all time, and we should just just appreciate it whilst it's here. The Lakers finally got back to winning ways last night, putting a dent in the Suns' quest for that Western Conference number one seed. Anthony Davis, back from back spasms, had 42 points, 12 boards and 5 assists as the Lakers took a 123-110 victory. LA needs to finish two games ahead of the Blazers to avoid the play-in and have the Knicks, Rockets, Pacers and Pelicans this week. Speaking of the Knicks, Derrick Rose was in full bloom last night, dropping 25 points off the bench as they got a big win on the road against the Clippers. That W stays off late pushes from Miami and Atlanta for the fourth seed. And we'll go from Rose to Rozier. Terry dropped a career-high 43 as the Hornets fell to the Pelicans last night. The Pelicans, of course, are pushing to get into that 10th seed for the play-in. The OKC Thunder have continued to commit to their 100% tank. Per ESPN, they've been outscored by 490 points in their last 25 games, the worst margin of defeat by a team in any 25-game span in NBA history. The previous record was set in 92-93 when the Mavericks were outscored by 489 points and won just 11 games. Players of the week, Bojan Bogdanovic and Russell Westbrook. So we'll end on the right note, because we don't talk about the Jazz enough. Donovan Mitchell continues to miss time. This is his fourth week with an ankle injury. Utah have still managed to tighten their grip on the Western Conference one seed and the best record in the league overall. They've won five straight, and they got a career-high 48 points from Bojan Bogdanovic on Friday night as they outgunned the Nuggets 127-120. Now, I'm sure I've missed lots there, but that was a hell of a ramble. Mike, I'll come to you first. What was your favourite moment of the week? It could be anything.
Favourite moment of the week? Well, it's tough to boil it down to one, but just on a quick note, last night watching the Ball Brothers go at it, I mean, I didn't get to watch the whole game, but I went back and just saw some highlights and just like, this is a moment that's come now that we thought about maybe like 4 or 5 years ago when the Ball Brothers were all, you know, starting to hype up around the league and stuff. So that was pretty cool. But for me, it was Steph Curry with the 49 points in three quarters. And he only played about 29, 30 minutes versus OKC, you know, absolutely crazy thing to watch. And for him right now, he's in, I think, one of the closest scoring battles of all time with Bradley Beal. So for him to get that, I think it's going to help lock that up for him, because, you know, Bradley Beal went out with an injury last game. So those are definitely my two favorite moments from last week.
Yeah, both great choices. Imagine playing your brother. Like, I know what sibling rivalries are like. I've got two brothers. Imagine playing them on a global stage. You would, and just that, diving for the loose ball was phenomenal stuff to witness. Harry, what was your favorite moment of the week?
I also kind of came up with two, because obviously I really wanted to go with the Cat and Jimmy badmouth when they kind of got, you know, a little bit aggy with each other. And I loved the Cat responding to something about, like, go get Rachel Nichols or something like that. I thought that was quite funny. And obviously I was gonna put that in the long run anyway. But I actually decided I couldn't ignore Brook Lopez's reaction when he got dunked on by that Houston Rockets player. And I've forgotten the guy's name already.
Kenyon Martin Jr.
That's the one. It was because he stares at him and he's screaming at him, and then Brook Lopez's like, ooh. And yeah, that's my favourite.
That
moment
was phenomenal. I forgot to include that. That was probably the funniest moment of the week by a long, long shot. Brook Lopez, just to have the awareness in that moment to come up with something comedic was brilliant. Of course, this is the last week of the regular season. Then we hit the playoff play-ins next Monday. This is obviously a new format. They trialled a single game elimination last year, but only in the West, in the bubble. Mike, what are your thoughts on the play-in as a feature in the league?
I don't know. Oh. It's a tough one. I think there's positives and negatives to it. As a player, I wouldn't like it. As a player, if I finished in that eighth seed or the seventh seed, I would feel cheated, because, you know, this is what you play the regular season to get to the playoffs. You don't play the regular season to get to another mini tournament where you have to make the playoffs again. So it for those teams and those guys, I kind of feel for them, because they've worked hard all season. Now, as a fan, we get more basketball to watch, and it makes things more interesting, and it adds, you know, the ninth and 10th seed from the East and the West. So four extra markets are stuck in it. They're cheering for it. So it keeps things spicy. It keeps things interested. It keeps more of the NBA market locked in, which is cool. Now, shifting back on another negative, that you're placing a lot of extra games on these guys. And I look at specifically like a guy like LeBron, who's, I think they're in the eighth spot right now. These are extra games that his team's going to have to play, and more games in the way of him getting to a final. So I feel from him on that, you know, the injury kind of aspect comes into it. But at the end of the day, it's more basketball for us to watch. It makes things more exciting. And, you know, the way the league's been going this year, we don't know who's going to end up in those 7-8 spots on both sides of the board.
Yeah, I kind of get that. You came from the perspective of if you were in the 7th or 6th seed. What about if you were in the sort of 9 or 10th seed or 6th seed or above?
If you're in the 9 or 10th seed, though, do you really deserve to be there? You know what I mean? Like, that's a long way out. But I mean, for those, like I said, for those guys, for those teams and those organizations and that fan base, it's huge, because it just gives them another, you know, couple weeks of there's a chance for them to get into the final tournament.
I'd argue some of those lower seeded Eastern teams don't deserve to be there anyway, but that's another argument. Harry, I can't remember, were you keen on the play-in tournament?
Yeah, I was, but that was mainly for the standpoint that I just enjoy. I enjoy the extra basketball. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a basketball fan. I'm not a pro, and so, you know, I just enjoy the extra basketball, and that's why I like it. And realistically, if the Wolves are going to make the playoffs in the next couple of seasons, it's going to be that way, isn't it? So, you know, we're not going to qualify for the playoffs outright, but you know, I like it. It's just extra basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I get the arguments both ways. I just like the fact that more teams have had to remain competitive for longer and haven't started shutting down players and coasting for a lottery pick. Okay, let's move on then into player awards for the season. We'll run through most of the awards, but we'll start with the big one, the MVP. Can anyone make an argument for anyone other than Jokic at this time?
LeBron James. No.
Kurt Band. Okay, let's phrase it another way. Is there any way that Jokic could lose it over these last four games?
No, I don't see it happening. I think that he has just been phenomenal from start to end. These last four games aren't going to change much in anybody's mind, in my opinion. You know, the only other guy that I really liked for it was Joel Embiid, but just with his injuries and everything this season, he's been, you know, up and down, and we haven't seen enough of him yet. So for me, it's definitely been Jokic. I mean, he's just been absolutely unstoppable scorer, just been great on the offensive end. He's thrown more passes than anyone else in the league this year. And then, you know, he's a 7 foot big, like, who's a point guard, and he's setting screens. He's getting guys open. He's looking, his court vision is probably the best on the team. And also he looks like he's in the best condition of his career. In my opinion, I think he's really locked down. I think they've cut out, all the kebabs or whatever he's been eating, and he's really slicked up, and he just looks focused. He looks locked in, and he looks in great shape. So for me, it's Jokic.
Yeah, I think not only does he lead the league in passes, but it's like by a long way or something like that. It's like 100 points to the next person, and that's the biggest gap between any two players. 100 passes between him and Sabonis, I want to say. Harry, do you is it all three of us here saying Jokic?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's I've noted down some reasons behind some of the other picks I had, but for Jokic, I just put Jokic and then brackets, no argument, and that was it. So yeah, Jokic.
Okay, that was quick, nice and easy. Rookie of the year. I'll come to Harry first. Harry, who have you got for Anthony Edwards.
The Ant-Man, it is. I'm sorry, don't get me wrong, if LaMelo Ball didn't get injured for like a month and a half, it would have been LaMelo Ball. So you know, I'm not gonna act like Anthony Edwards has been the hands down rookie of the year all season, because he hasn't. But he's played, I think, virtually every game. You know, he's not really missed a lot of time at any one point, like LaMelo Ball did. He's made the most threes in a single season by a rookie in NBA history, which is a pretty sick, considering when he is, you know, draft scouting report was that, you know, he can play downhill and attack the rim, and that's about it. Which I think is, you know, that's pretty cool. And he's just been on a tear since the All-Star break. He's been absolutely sick, averaging north of 20, I can't remember. But and he's generally been probably the better second option than D'Angelo Russell for the Wolves for the last second half of the season. So yeah. Anthony Edwards is my rookie of the year.
I figured that might be where you go. Mike, are you in agreement?
I put down LaMelo Ball. Now, I think it's a tough one, but because of LaMelo Ball's injury, it makes a harder decision to make. But I feel like LaMelo Ball started the season and was consistent throughout the season much more than Anthony Edwards. I think Anthony Edwards had a slow start. We didn't really know what we were getting from him at the beginning of the season. But like Harry said, he did, after that All-Star break, he really came alive, and we really saw, you know, what he could bring to the table. I think he was averaging like 22 and shooting like well over 50% and just like a bunch of other stats. But for me, LaMelo, for the age that he is, and just how, when he came into the league, there was no learning curve, nothing. He just hit the ground running. Like, it was just like, I'm here. You know, he looked like he'd already been playing in the league, that to me. So I enjoyed watching LaMelo Ball play this year. And I'm looking forward to seeing both of them develop, but I think LaMelo Ball in my eyes.
Yeah. I agree with you. LaMelo Ball would be my pick. And I get that Anthony Edwards has played every game so far, I think. He's at 68 at the minute, and I'm assuming they've got four left this week. And Lamelo's missed time, but he's obviously come back very quickly from a broken wrist, and has just injected life into a team that actually have something to play for at the minute. So his stats don't feel as empty to me. Not that I'm saying that Anthony Edwards is putting up empty stats. It just feels like these are contributing to a team with a purpose at the minute. So he's my pick. I can see Harry sort of tightly pulling his...
his Anthony Edwards jersey.
Yeah.
I agree.
The great thing is they've both got tremendous potential to be stars in the league in the future. And I think I've got no reason to think that Anthony Edwards can't become a key contributor consistently on a winning team. If you had asked me before the season, I was one of the doubters of LaMelo about whether his game would adjust to it. And obviously that's didn't take what five games before he was throwing ridiculous passes. And I just had to sit there and go, yep, I was wrong on that one.
I think a lot of people were in that boat though, because he was an overhyped guy coming into the league, and obviously he didn't do the traditional go to college route and all that, and he had kind of a wild ride. But I think all that wild ride added to his experience, and that's why he looks like a more complete player than a lot of the other rookies coming into the league this year.
What do you think that says about the future of players coming into the NBA then? Because obviously he took a very different route. He spent time in Lithuania. I think it was Lithuania, but Latvia actually wasn't one of the Baltic countries. And then he obviously played in Australia last year. And he's been able to step up.
Yeah, and I think step up to the NCAA and that rigid system that they've had a stranglehold on for so many years. I think that, you know, he's not only him, and there's a few other players have done it, but definitely he's probably the most documented kid who's done it, where he showed a different pathway that you don't have to go to the NCAA route. You can do this in another way. I think that the way the NCAA is going right now, it's becoming a very transfer culture. You know, guys are just going to one school for 1 year, transferring, going to another school, transferring. The stability is they're losing the stability there a little bit. I've just read an article the other week about overtime, the media mm-hmm. outlet. They've just raised funds to start their own high school league, where they're setting up a bubble situation and taking the top 100 juniors and seniors from around the country and putting them in a bubble tournament. And these kids will be going to class within the bubble, and they'll be getting paid somewhere up to $100,000 a year. So there's all these other opportunities popping up now, I don't think the NCAA has the position that they once had, but I don't think that it'll ever go away. That will always be a pathway for any players, and still a great pathway for really good players as well.
Yeah, I think it's great that these opportunities are now becoming more, you know, popular, and people are becoming more aware of them. And it's good that that's, like you said, the stranglehold is being released slightly, because, you know, as great as the NCAA has been historically for producing these talent, it's because it's been the only route available. Interesting comment in the chat from Nick is that on the Bill Simmons pod, there was a debate on whether Ball's untraditional route shielded him from becoming a cookie cutter player and be more freewheeling. I think there's probably a lot to say about that, because there are sort of, you know, you go to a college that plays a particular system, and if you don't fit it, you don't get the minutes. That's maybe changed slightly as player power's risen. But if we go back to, like, you know, 20 years ago or so, we're sort of Bobby Knight's Indiana, it was very much his way or you got a chair thrown at you. So, Harry, did you have any thoughts on the non-traditional routes to the NBA?
I mean, you know, it's a change. I still think that NCAA and the college route will hold more of a weight with players. You know, we've seen it with, you know, not the upcoming draft, but next year's draft. You know, we've seen Chet Holmgreen, he committed to Gonzaga a couple of weeks ago, when, you know, there was equally as much opportunity for him to go, you know what, I want to play for the G League and Ignite or something like that. Because he's, for the most part, well, apart from one other player, he's generally the clear-cut number one in that draft class. And so he's got a lot of interest. And I think to those top players, the college route is going to still hold a lot of weight and still be the number one option.
Yeah, I see it. I do see it. Let's move on to most improved player. Mike, who have you got for MIP?
Most improved player. I had down, hands down, Julius Randle. If you look at Julius Randle and what he's done with the New York Knicks this season, the guy just looks like he's just had a breath of fresh air. It just looks like, you know, he's had a fire lit under him. Here's a guy that he came into the league with a little bit of hype. You know, he spent all those years on the Lakers and then finally, you know, makes his way over to the Knicks and it just looks like everything is kind of locking in at the right moment for him. I think he's at a, you know, an age now where he's becoming, you know, more of a veteran player and guys are looking up to him and, he's delivered this season. Finally. I think that, they've you know, put a solid coach in there. They've put a solid team around him, but he's really stepped up in the big moments. He's come and had big games and he's put himself, helped them drag them some wins this season. So definitely Julius Randle for me.
Yeah. Both Harry and I were nodding there. Harry, would you want to add on Randle?
I think, you know, if it wasn't for the kind of season that Jokic is having, if Jokic wasn't there, Julius Randle would be in the MVP discussion because he has played really, really well. The Knicks have massively improved. They're a top four team in the East. And I do think he would have been there if it wasn't for the fact that Jokic has just been Jokic this year. He's just been great. He's just been great, as the Knicks have been as well. Can't fault that choice.
It's crazy that the Knicks are a top four team in the East, isn't it?
Oh, tell me about it. And this seems like the year that Knicks fans have been the quietest. Normally they're talking about how great their team is and they're in the doldrums. And this year they see everyone seems a lot quieter about it. Maybe they're just sort of like in shock and awe of it all. It's amazing that they're a top four seed and they're actually a team you can root for. By an absolute landslide, it's him. There's a great pod with him on and Woj where he talks about the sort of things he's been doing to get himself to this position. Obviously, he had time with LA, as you said, broke his leg in his very first game for the Lakers, so missed most of that season. Ended up on the Pelicans where he was a decent player, but I think under the bright lights of New York, he's absolutely shone. And Tibbs, I said at the start of the season, makes teams better. Whatever their floor is, he raises that floor right up, and he's done it with the Knicks. Let's move on to Defensive Player of the Year. Harry, who have you got for Depoy?
I've got Ben Simmons. First of all, because I'm a Rudy Gobert hater, and I just don't want him to win another one. But secondly, because there is no better perimeter defender in the league right now than Ben Simmons. And I stand by that. He is absolutely ridiculous. Like, if I was a professional, which I know, you know, really I should be, but I'm not because, you know, the NBA is missing out. But the last person I would want to be guarding me is Ben Simmons. And I do generally think, you know, he's the defensive player of the year because Gobert, as much as he is, Gobert is the odds on favorite at the minute, but I still don't think, you know, he's been that outstanding. I think he's just been, maybe that's because we're kind of used to Gobert being a sick defender right now. And so, you know, when he puts up all these blocks per game and rebounds per game, it's not exactly a shock anymore. But that's how it works sometimes. That's why Russell Westbrook didn't win another MVP because people were just used to the triple doubles when really, when you think about it, maybe he should have. So, you know, I think it's Ben Simmons' turn.
Interesting. Mike, who have you gone with?
I've got three guys. I've got Bam Adebayo, I got Ben Simmons, and I got Rudy Gobert. Harry, I love the enthusiasm with Ben Simmons. I love it. And he is a great pick. But I think just once again, Rudy has stepped up. And yeah, you can hate because he's 7'10" or whatever he is, and he's got the 7'9" wingspan, but he does what he does his job and he does it efficiently. And he's helped raise that Utah Jazz up to you know, the best record in the NBA and the best record in the West. So I think if there's any time, it's now that he deserves it because of what he's done with this Utah Jazz team and help bring them to this place. And it is tough because when you see a guy doing stuff year after year, you know, the greatness starts to get unrecognized, or it just becomes accepted, or it's too easy to overlook it. So, but I'm still recognizing it, Rudy. So Rudy's got my defensive player of the year.
I've also gone Ben Simmons.
Ooh.
Yes.
I
thought I was going to be on my own with that one again.
But I think there's a flawed way we look at the Defensive Player of the Year award, and it sort of gravitates towards big guys all the time. And I guess, you know, geographically they're likely closer to the rim, so they're more likely to be rim protectors. Well, obviously their height plays into that as well. But I begin to get more worried with perimeter guys. I say I get more worried. Obviously, I don't have to deal with them. With perimeter guys that teams have to scheme away from. Like, if you remember a few years back, the way that people were scheming away from Kawhi Leonard, where they would literally just play, well, like one guy on offense would just go and stand really far away from the action to drag Kawhi right out of the way. And we don't see that as much now, but what we see is a lot of switching. And people talk about, you know, Kyrie dropped, what was it, 37 on Ben Simmons. No, he didn't. Go and look at who was guarding him on those 37 points. It wasn't Ben Simmons. I think he got like 5 on him or something like that. I'm starting to value guys who don't necessarily put up box score stats. So the blocks and, to a degree, rebounding is still considered a defensive stat. And instead, guys who are that good that they will just be like, okay, let's run some kind of action here to get you well away from whatever we want to do. So I'm going with Ben Simmons on that one. But I did have Gobert second and Bam third. So the top three sits pretty equally. Mike, do you want to tell me why I'm wrong?
No, I was just about to say to you that I agree that I think the defensive player system is flawed, because coming from a player's perspective, I'm a big, so I never really have a point guard guarding me, or I would never be guarding a point guard. You know what I mean? So it's, I feel like the defensive players, there should be a defensive team, but I feel like giving it to one guy, it's a flawed system, because, you know, in this game, you know, we're all playing different positions. We all, you know, it's not like, you know, you're not going to see a point guard out there guarding, you know, a 7-footer like in the post. But they're both online for the same award. So it's such a I think it's a flawed system with that award.
Awesome.
Rant over.
No, I could go on for hours about, I'd rather have the guy who gets the changes the angle of the shot ever so slightly so someone else can get the rebound than the guy who gets the rebound. Let's move on to Coach of the Year. Mike, let's come to you first on this one.
Coach of the Year. I got three guys. I got to give my shout outs to my second two. Mike Malone at Denver, what he's been able to do. He's also a former Loyola Greyhound like myself, so shout out to Mike Malone. Tom Thibodeau on the Knicks. I think, you know, the turnaround that they've had this season has just been amazing, and you know, there's no other person who gets, you know, that respect than Tom, because I think it's a lot of that comes down to him. But my coach of the year is going to Monty Williams for the Phoenix Suns. The whole turnaround they had, and I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to adding Chris Paul, but I think that what they've done down there, and a lot of that has to go to Monty Williams, is they've created this very unselfish culture. And they've got a great group, a great mix of veterans and then youth, and some guys that have been kind of stuck with that team for a while, like guy like Booker, who's, you know, he's felt that not making the playoffs every year. He's felt that pain. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's getting a chance. And, you know, a guy like Chris Paul has really brought that out of him. But I think it all comes down to Monty Williams and installing that and installing that trust in the team.
Yeah, we touched on this last week on the pod, and he was my choice as well. Harry, I think you went differently, didn't you?
I did. I went with Tom Thibodeau, and I'm still going with Tom Thibodeau, because the way I see it with the Phoenix Suns, and I've thought about it since last week, because my arguments last week were not particularly compelling. so I've thought about it. And with Monty Williams and the Suns, granted, they were a bottom seeder team, a bottom of the, like, you know, fringe playoff team at best, a high lottery pick team at worst. But they've taken a team that had a young star in Devin Booker, added another star, granted he's older, in Chris Paul, and, you know, some fairly decent role players, and they've developed into a good side. Whereas Tom Thibodeau, or Thibodeau, or Thibodeau, whatever Matt called him last week.
I think Matt, the guest last week on the show, I think called him Thibodeau or something like that.
Tom Thibodeau has taken a very mediocre Knicks team that had no stars and created a star in Julius Randle, has, like he did when he was coaching the Timberwolves, he has reinvigorated Derrick Rose when Derrick Rose arrived. And I think, you know, just based off that, Tom Peekaboo, as it's just said to be said in the chat, he's the coach of the year.
I mean, I can see it going to Tibbs. He's, like I say, he's an incredible floor raiser. Every team he goes to gets better. Until they run into the ground, which we won't, I don't think we're seeing that as much this year. That sort of grueling physical load that the players have taken in the season anyway. I don't think he's necessarily adding to that. I've gone with Monty Williams as well, although I said last week, they actually started last season fantastically until Ayton got injured. I thought Rubio was a key for them. So they were already trending in the right direction for me. Obviously, they had the bubble where they went 8-0, but to go from not sniffing the playoffs in 11 seasons to challenging until the final week for the number one seed. I say the final week because I don't think they're going to get it now. I think I think they're two games back, and that's a bit hard to make up over these last four games. Monty Williams, that's just a meteoric rise for these Suns, and he's overseen it all. So I'd be more than happy for him to get that award. Sixth man of the year. Has anyone gone for anyone other than Jordan Clarkson?
Blake Griffin. I haven't really. I just saw Hoopin and Lootin took Blake Griffin for sixth man in the chat and thought I'd... I went with Jordan Clarkson as well. Yeah, I went with Jordan Clarkson as well. It's similar to what I did with Jokic. It just says Jordan Clarkson in brackets, no doubt, rather than no argument. I've gone with Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I think Jordan Clarkson's been incredible for them. Talk about the definition of instant offense. You know, you insert this guy at any moment in the game, whether they're up, they're down, whatever. He is Mr. Consistent. Like, he's coming in, he's giving me a bucket. There's another guy on that team, though, that I can't think could possibly rival him, and that's Joe Ingles. We've seen they brought Joe off the bench quite a bit this season as well. And I think he's been great for them. And I think that's just another reason why you got two guys like that coming off the bench for the Jazz. Just shows, you know, their depth and what they're capable of. But I love Joe, but I got to give it to Jordan.
Yeah, I'm giving it to Jordan just for the additional offense he brings. Jingles is like you say, though, he's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I don't understand how people still fall for his fakes. They're so slow. But he's an incredible player. And his story, just, you know, to almost be out of the league before he was in it as an already sort of mature rookie to where he is now is just absolutely insane. Okay, let's go to Executive of the Year then. Harry, who have you got for Exec of the Year?
I went with James Jones. I thought I'd already snaked Suns out of enough awards in this, you know, where they generally Suns, like, you know, affiliated people. I've snaked them out of this too much already, so I decided that I would be fair and go with James Jones on this one, because he has built a phenomenal team over last year. And you know, I don't really think you can give it to the Nets exec, because the players that he brought in wanted to go there, if that makes sense. I know Chris Paul said, you know, I would like to go to Phoenix, but he still put the pieces in on that team to make them an incredible team when, you know, even I had written them off as being a 7th-8th seed maximum. I think James Jones has done a brilliant job this year, and he will be the NBA Executive of the Year.
Mike, anyone?
I got to agree. I think he's done a great job. I think every team that he's been on, he's helped make better. You know, he was the guy who brought Monty Williams there in 2019, when there was rumors that Booker wanted to leave. He managed to put a halt to all that. And then, you know, bringing Chris Paul in was probably the biggest acquisition that they've made in quite a long time. So I think it's great to see a former player stepping into that front office and, you know, doing great things and being successful. And I think he deserves it, you know, especially, you know, after even last season when they came off, they were, what were they, 8-0 in that bubble. And then they brought all that energy straight into this season without skipping a beat. So he definitely gets it in my eyes.
I would have no issue with James Jones getting it. I think Sean Marks will get it. I just, you know, before the trade happened, people were questioning whether it would work. And we've just seen them, well, for the 7 games they've played together, seamlessly fit together. And Harden has just become just an incredible, he already was incredible. This is why renewed Harden has been in Brooklyn has just been incredible to see. It's different, yet strikingly similar, if that makes sense, to the Houston Rockets Harden in terms of the output he makes. But this just feels more like a team buy-in and not Harden and 4 other guys. He's obviously had to give up significant pieces in order to get Harden, but I think they've done really well in creating a team that is attractive to everyone else. And I get that a lot of that is to do with the arrival of KD and Kyrie, but there had to be a reason they wanted to go there in the first place. And I know that's not this season. That's now 2 seasons ago. But I would, you know, no issue if James Jones gets it, but my pick goes to Sean Marks. And I'll give a special shout out to Daryl Morey as well, because he didn't pick up any superstars, but the minute he got to Philadelphia, what he did to get them the shooting they needed in Danny Green and Seth Curry is just the reason he's my favorite GM. Cool. All right. That's the awards done. Kirk, do you want to play the intro for the next bit?
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Okay, so Nick, who's actually in the chat at the minute, who is usually on for this segment, if NBA teams were forced to field an entire roster of whatever their team name is, e.g. 5 Wizards versus 5 Pelicans, who would you back for the title? Mike, you want to have a stab at this?
Strange question. Okay, I think if we look at a few of the different, I mean, it's got to be like there's some Timberwolves out there, there's some Grizzlies out there. Those look, they do some damage. I think I go Dinos. I think I go with my Raptors. I think Raptors would be able to tear some people up.
So we're going with the old school dinosaur Raptors and not the bird of prey style they're now trying to...
We're going old school, baby. We're going old school. Bring out Barney.
So they've absolutely got the pace, probably popping a few balls on the way. My paleontology isn't great, but haven't Velociraptors got short arms, like not T-Rex short, but could that, you know, defensive wingspan?
I think they're more offensive focused. They're going straight to the hole. A lot of bounce.
From Jurassic Park, they can certainly jump anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
Harry, who have you got?
I went with the Boston Celtics for the pure reason that I don't think anyone wants to go to war with a group of angry Irishmen, Scotsmen and Welshmen. I don't think that's anything anyone wants to do. Any angry Celts or anything like that. I wouldn't want to do it. So, I think the Celtics would smash their way to a title.
Okay. I think Nick nailed it in the question. It's the Wizards. They're just magic, and your dinosaurs are now bunnies or something without a vertical jump, and your Celts are now, I don't know, something
English.
Something not
leprechauns.
So they're leprechauns. I'm going to go with the Wizards and their spells they can cast. Awesome. Let's move on from that. Talking on D, our discourse on Discord. Come join our Discord community, discord.me/doubleclutch. This week we've had a few decent conversations, actually. I don't know if you saw this conversation, this sort of story anyway, Mike, but Ja Morant claimed himself to be a top 5 point guard. So we debated whether he was or not. We've got him landing just outside the top 10 around that sort of mark. we also discussed, do you know, Funko Pops. You know what a Funko Pop is? You probably can't see one, but there's a Yanis one just over my shoulder there, them weird little doll things. But there's some White Men Can't Jump Funko Pops coming out. So we're all quite excited about that. But they've already been delayed 6 months, according to Hoopin' and Lootin', which is disappointing. And for anyone who wants to watch White Men Can't Jump, it's streaming on Disney Plus at the minute. So shout out to Flying Tortoise for the heads up on that one. To this morning, we had a brief chat on the all-time injury comeback starting five and who that would be. And we landed on Derrick Rose, Bernard King, Paul George, Danny Manning, and Amari Stoudemire. And we also had our Fantasy League results come in this week. So it was the final round, the championship round, and it was a close affair. 7-5 it was the final score. And the winner was our very own Tom Hall and his team, Raging Bowl. They beat It's Time to Jingles, Scotty Sycamore's team, after a very, very long, hard-fought season. Mike, you've been the MVP of a national winning team. Talk us through the emotions that Tom must be feeling right now.
Oh, man, just pure excitement and joy. You know, you got to make sure you stay humble. Thank the fans, you know, thank God. Thank your parents who got you there, who set you up with your first fantasy basketball account, you know, who really, really paved the pathway for you. It's all about being gracious with the win.
Amazing. No doubt that Stoke is drenched in champagne tonight. We look forward to the ski rubble photos. A big thank you to all 20 teams who took part. If you want to be involved in next season's league, who knows, maybe we'll even do a prize. Then head over to our Discord server, discord.me/doubleclutch. We've got a couple of questions we didn't hit earlier in the Q&A with you. So let's just quickly finish them out and then we'll be done, basically. So from Knicks Nation, one of the positives as a fan about the addition of the play-in games is far fewer teams seemingly content to tank at a relatively early stage in the season while they might still have a playoff chance. But are there any teams that you think, even if they make the play-in games, might have actually been better off either tanking or hitting the restart button in the same way that Orlando did this year? That's a good one. Harry, you got anything for this?
I'll be honest, and my apologies, I was reading the little speech bubbles on the little players on Kirk's screen and I missed the question. So you might have to go to my question.
Brilliant. Basically, with the play-in tournament, is there any teams that you think would be better off not making the play-in tournament and instead either tanking or having hit the restart like Orlando did?
I remember this question because I did actually answer it on my notes. And I thought the Bulls, I had two. The Bulls were the one from the East and the Spurs were the one from the West, because I feel like the Bulls are still needing another piece, another young piece. And there's some really, really good players in the draft class coming up. And I'm not talking they need a top three pick. You know, like any of the players in the lottery are going to be enough to improve a team like the Bulls to maybe take another step in a couple of years. But the Bulls were my one from the East and then the Spurs for the West, because I know they have DeMar DeRozan, but DeMar DeRozan's not really got that same hype anymore. I don't think they have that guy for the future in Jonte Murray or Keldon Johnson either. So I think they could have, and as much as I very much doubt that Greg Popovich would have allowed such a thing, I think, you know, tanking for a top pick would have been a good shout for the Spurs this year.
They did it for Tim Duncan. They tanked the heck out of that season for Tim Duncan, and DeMar's potentially gone this summer. So that's not a bad shout. Mike, did you have anyone spring to mind?
I mean, those were the two that I had in mind. I think the Spurs, but Harry said, I don't think that it would be in their DNA to do it. I know they back in the 90s, they did it, but in between there, they got used to winning championships and making the playoffs every year. So I think it would have been a tough pill for them to swallow as an organization. But that being said, they're not the team that they once were. And DeMar, great player, loved him in Toronto. But in today's NBA, I don't know if his game translates as well. And they don't really have that second or third option that teams need. You know, you can't just get it done with one guy these days. So, Spurs for me.
Yeah, for me, it's the Pelicans. I know that they're one spot outside at the minute, but they're a game back on the Spurs in the 11th seed. I just don't think they have the right bits to put around Zion for the long term. I think there's some personnel issues there that they need to address in terms of what they can do on the floor, spacing wise, things like that. And they would probably be better off just getting, even if it's not the high draft pick, but you know, even if it's not drafting the high draft pick, but it's getting that asset, the pick itself, to trade for a piece they need. So that would be my pick. And then one from Suns Fans UK. How would you rate Luka's karate chop technique? Obviously, this is referring to his cheap shot on Colin Sexton last night. Either of you martial arts analysts?
No, but I thought it was great. I liked the technique. It looked like it hurt.
it was a cheeky one, wasn't it? It was just kind of, it kind of struck me as like when you like, I'm trying to think how to describe, like when you're like messing around with your mates, you were like, and someone was trying to tell you to stop messing around basically, and you'd just be like hitting them anyway. It just struck me as that. I think Kirk's playing it on the screen now, so
yeah,
little bump. Ooh. From Sexton, and it doesn't even look that bad. You can barely see it. It's just a get off me.
For me, it was the look on his face. Like, he was so surprised that Sexton yeah. would actually try and hit him. Like, what? Who are you hitting here, boy?
I mean, he's getting into a lot of trouble, isn't he, at the minute with the refs? He's on one technical foul away from a ban, which they really don't need over these last four games. So, Luka, thin ice. Flagrant two instead, though. So he doesn't get that ban. Games of the week. Mike, is there a game that you think people should be watching this week?
Yeah, I think we have Lakers versus Knicks on Tuesday night, aka early Wednesday morning, I think at 3 a.m. UK time. You know, the Lakers right now are in the mix, in that playoff mix, and they need every win they can get. This is the first game that LeBron might be back to help them win these extra games. And you know, AD was on fire with a big comeback game the other night with 42 points. And the Knicks are moving as well. So I think it'll be a good game to clue into, because it's a must win for the Lakers.
Yep, Harry.
I went with, if I remember correctly, I think I went with Blazers Suns on Thursday at 3 a.m. Because of the West play-in race, the Trail Blazers are only, one game ahead of the Lakers right now. Trail Blazers sixth and Lakers seventh. And, well, as you've pointed out already, Mike, earlier on in the show, they've got the Suns, Jazz, and... Well, Jazz, Suns, and then the Nuggets for their final three games. And I reckon, you know, we could see them tie up that night, depending on the scores from both the Lakers game and the Trailblazers Suns game. But I think that's an interesting one to look at for the final play-in rankings at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's interesting who we're all looking around the play-in race sort of leans to how much interest it's creating this season. I've gone with the ninth seeded Memphis Grizzlies at the Golden State Warriors at a time to be decided on Sunday. So obviously they're waiting to see what the possible matchups are before they release the TV schedule for next weekend. But that could have massive implications as to whether you need to win two games or one game in order to qualify for the playoffs. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting final week of the season. Just want to say thanks to everyone for dropping in tonight. Thank you to everyone who's followed and subscribed. I saw a friend of the show, Jamie the Tweeter, subscribed. Follow from NBA UK fans, Blytho _ GAE2701. These get harder and harder to read out every week. So thank you to everyone who gave us a follow. Make sure you're following us at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. I'm sure there are probably others I've forgotten. Doubleclutch.uk for the latest articles we put out there. Massive thanks to Mike for joining us tonight. Mike, where can people find you?
At MikeTuck15 on Instagram and Twitter.
Amazing. We'll keep in touch and we'll have to get you back on again soon. It's been far too long since you were last on. I think it's been like two seasons.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Good. Excellent. We will get you back. I've said it on air now, so that's kind of holding you to it. But thanks everyone for tuning in. We will catch you next week.